Well, we apparently could still use some help with jet noise. It's so loud that it's riling some residents of several Greater Boston communities.
Now just take that and imagine it every minute for 18 hours a day. It sounds like if you're standing over a food processor going full blast and you're making yourself a smoothie. Imagine doing that every minute, turning it on and off, and that's pretty much what it feels like.
That's architect Rob Elfer, who lives right under a Logan Airport flight path in Milton. Elfer spoke with one of our producers just this morning. In 2013, the FAA and Massport started using new, more precise flight paths to Logan, but that resulted in more planes crowding into tight air lanes and more noise complaints from residents. And now, because of those complaints and some pressure from lawmakers, the FAA and MIT are looking into how to fix the noisy flight path problem. Joining us to explain what might be done here is John Hansman, a professor of aeronautics and the director of the International Center for Air Transportation at MIT. He's among those looking into this problem. Hello there. Welcome to Radio Boston, Professor.
Happy to be here.
Also with us is Cindy Christensen, and she's an associate professor of health policy at Boston University. She is also a resident of Milton, and she serves on Massport's Community Advisory Committee. Hi there, Cindy.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
We should mention we did reach out to the FAA, and they declined to join us, and Massport CEO Tom Glynn was unavailable today, but we do look forward to hearing from them in the future. Professor, I would like to start with you, though. What changed in 2013? Can you explain how and why there was a change in flight patterns that then resulted in these increased complaints?
Sure. So actually, even before 2013, the navigation systems on airplanes have improved. Basically, we shifted from ground-based navigation aids to GPS.
Ground-based meaning?
Beacons on the ground. So it used to be you'd have to fly to a beacon and then go from that beacon to the next one until you got to the airport.
That sounds really like way before 2013. Am I wrong in that assumption?
No, we've been doing
it. Sounds like almost primitive, right?
Well, it actually started. It's interesting. If you go to the history, they used to be fires that were lit by people for the airmail, and then they went to light beacons, and then they went to radio navigation beacons. And we actually still have those beacons that are called VOR stations or NDB stations around the world. But with GPS, and they're the backup, but with GPS, we can fly more precisely.
And more precisely meant more planes, meant more noise.
So what you could do is you could actually lay down waypoints, just like you can do today with your phone, you know, where the roads are. And the airplanes can fly, you know, within a relatively tight corridor. So that allowed us to design, or they started to use trajectories which are called either RNAV or RNP flight paths, which would allow you to then fly the airplane much more precisely to the runway, away from the runway, and also in the routes at altitude.
Hmm. And so was there a consideration that more planes in narrower lanes here that might be more precise might also cause more noise problems?
The focus and the design of the procedures was really to be more efficient, to save fuel, reduce CO2 and greenhouse gas emissions, and also to improve safety. With the older systems, that you had airplanes distributed around so that there was a safety concern. The design of the procedures was to do no harm in terms of noise, so it had to be as good or better than the existing procedures.
Mm-hmm.
And right now what we're looking at is whether we can take that same technology and use it to reduce the noise by designing procedures that are specifically designed to reduce noise.
Such as?
Well, there are things that you might be able to do in terms of keeping airplanes over the water. One of the things, when you come into the final landing, you actually go to a radio beacon system, which is literally right on the runway. And it's two-dimensional. One is left-right. It's called the localizer. And the other is vertical, called the glide slope. The way the glide slope works, based on the antenna pattern, says for safety reasons, you have to approach the glide slope from below. And the reason is there are false glide slopes. The nominal glide slope is at 3 degrees. There's a false glide slope at 6 degrees and 9 degrees. So if you came from above, you may actually be coming down too steeply and have a hard time landing.
Hmm.
So today with GPS, we could approach either from above that glide slope, so you may be able to keep the airplanes higher, or at least keep them on a continuous glide slope all the way in. So that's the kind of thing that you might be able to do.
We know that we've heard from Congressman Capuano, who said, why not just spread these flights over more towns? Too simplistic there? Or
so this gets into an interesting question on how we measure what noise impact is. The standard international metric is something called the day-night noise level. And there's which basically measures the amount of noise, the number of events, and averages them over some period of time. The way that works is that if you take, if you go, for example, if you had 30 flights over your head and you increased it to 40 flights, you would get an increase in the amount of noise. But it doesn't continue to increase as you get to more and more flights. So the difference between 30 and 40 is less than the difference between 0 and 10. So when you spread the flights out, you have more people that are actually getting a really big bump up in the noise. Whereas if you concentrate it, there are some people that are getting a little bit more noise. But you've actually reduced the noise in many other people. The challenge we have is that metric doesn't really take into account the frequency effect, the having it happen again and again and again.
Right.
So one of the things we will be looking at and people are looking at is alternative metrics. So you would look at the traditional DNL impact, but you would look at other metrics that look specifically at that frequency of event.
Okay. Professor Christensen, who is an associate professor of health policy at Boston University and a resident of Milton, aside from the scientific ways of measuring the impact of noise here, tell us what it's like, where you live and what you're experiencing.
Well, I think numbers help tell the story. In the last 12 months, there have been 70,000 planes fly over Milton. These planes are at altitudes around 2,000 feet. And because of these concentrated flight paths that John was just talking about, they're going over the same homes. So 70,000 arrivals over the same town means that if we average this over a year, there would be one plane every 8 minutes. Of course, they're not averaged over the year. We do have quiet times. Sometimes we're given 4 hours between midnight and 4 o'clock where there's no planes flying over us. So that's why the information usually is told as we get them every minute, we get them every 2 minutes. But a plane even averaged out over the year, so for every hour of every day, of every day and night, every 8 minutes, is just too many planes over one community.
And this is something you definitely noticed change from 2013 when these flight patterns changed to today. Is that right?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think should be done? When you hear that this is under study, are you glad that it's being studied, or do you have input for the researchers at all because you're living with this?
I think it's very important that community involvement is brought in now. As you mentioned, I'm a health policy researcher, and we have learned that we, as academics, we cannot sit in our offices and fix problems without including all stakeholders. Right now, the people on the ground are not getting their voices heard. And I think it's extremely important that the science meets the community and they work on the problems together.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk about science a little bit because I want to know what we know or don't know about how noise affects people, aside from the fact that it might be annoying. So we spoke with Jonathan Levy, who's a professor of environmental health at Boston University, about the health effects of noise. And he told us that while noise pollution is hard to evaluate on its own, it's people's perception of noise that's really the determinant in how health is affected. Let's listen to what he had to say.
We think that the cardiovascular effects of noise are because of things like stress and sleep disturbance, and so that really is influenced by how people perceive the noises around them, whether noise levels maybe are going up or going down, and so there's a lot of complexities that you perhaps don't see with other kinds of exposures like air pollution that have direct physical effects.
So, Cindy Christensen, what do you say to that when you hear your colleague at Boston University, Jonathan Levy, talk about the perception of noise and how that affects health? What do we know about noise pollution and health?
I think Professor Levy is right on. A lot of the information that we have about noise and air pollution from aviation comes from other countries. America's been a bit slow. One of the things, though, just 2 years ago that has gotten our attention is a study out of LAX, where they have a similar two parallel runways for arrivals, and they have found a huge increase in the number of ultrafine particles from arrivals. My understanding is we've kind of always known that departures pollute. But what's new about this is that there is a problem with arrivals, too, and that's not known. But we do know ultrafine particles are not something that we should be exposed to.
Hmm. And where are those from? Explain an ultrafine particle.
Well, that's not my area of expertise, but I can tell you what I've learned, and that is that because of the way fuel burns on the arrival when the engines are not revving, that it burns differently, and the ultrafine particles are part of what's being emitted. So in the LAX study, communities as far as 10 miles out had a doubling of the ultrafine particles compared to places where the arrivals did not travel over.
What do we know about abatement? And Professor, I don't know if you know a little bit about this, and Cindy, I'm going to ask you as well, but just briefly, Professor, could abatement help here? I mean, are there ways to, say, soundproof something somehow to kind of make this a little bit easier and keep the planes on the tracks that you would like them to stay on?
We have been doing abatement for quite a while, typically at for areas that are impacted at the what's called significant level or greater than 65 DNL. So abatement works at very high noise levels. Actually, the challenge here is the noise levels that we're talking about are actually not that large. So you can abate, you know, you can put someone in a soundproof box, but these are at the levels that you would expect of normal noise. They're the same level of an air conditioner. The issue is that in certain locations like Milton, the background levels are very low. So, you know, you could do it, but you have to be very, very quiet. And it's really not practical to soundproof every home in the country, you know, because you're really going to do that. So there's limits to what you can do. Hmm.
So when do you think your review of this might be finished?
Well, we hope to have some early recommendations in the next six months or so. Our process is going to be to look at the technology, look at the procedures into and out of Logan, identify potential opportunities that would improve noise, do some analysis, and then identify what the constraints are. We will then make recommendations to both Massport and the FAA as to things to look at. They will have to go through their own safety reviews to determine whether they can be implemented.
All right. John Hansman, Professor of Aeronautics and the Director of the International Center for Air Transportation at MIT. Thanks for coming in.
Sure.
Also, Cindy Christensen, Associate Professor of Health Policy at Boston University, a resident of Milton, and she's on Massport's Community Advisory Committee. Thanks so much, Cindy.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, a look at a new kind of food magazine, one that tackles food policy and some of the interesting people behind the food in Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.